You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It's Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Tuesday, and this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, New York Times contributor, CNN contributor, Wajahat Ali on the American Muslim community, resistance to Trump, and is there home for Muslims inside the Democratic Party? We'll also talk about the first 100 days of Donald Trump foreign policy, from instigation to self-dealing. We'll cover it all. And President Trump, sorry for saying that, wants to meet and his meeting with members of Congress about North Korea as the saber rattling continues. China continuing attempts to soothe tensions and restore what has been essentially for a couple of decades now the status quo with North Korea and the United States. Iranians heading to the polls this summer, voting on the fate of the nuclear deal from Iran's perspective, as well as Iran's domestic challenges with a stagnant economy and extreme income inequality. Monuments to America's apartheid past are getting demolished in the South, and some people are complaining about it. We have video footage of that. And just in today, Jason Chaffetz, flanked by Elijah Cummings, senior Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, looks like Mike Flynn took money from foreign governments. The White House is refusing to release documents to investigators related to Flynn's payments. And another part of the Russia scandal where the smoking gun is coming out of a gun that everybody saw get shot a long time ago. But anyways, more heat on Mike Flynn. Dad, what's going to happen? And Bernie Sanders, abortion, progressive politics, the controversy continues. I'll give you my thoughts on that. Climate marches coming up this Sunday, this Saturday across the country, a week after the science march, and new policy initiatives connecting the climate crisis with inequality. Of course, that's true in the United States and globally. Effects of climate change hit developing countries the hardest, and we're going to have a Cameron appreciation segment in the fun half of today's program. All that and more.
And every day going forward.
And every day going forward. Going to have to figure out how to explain to Sam who Cameron is, because it's going to have, wait a second, who? And he was the other rapper who was on with O'Reilly? Okay. Stamps.com is a great way to save your time and money, which you can use to grow your small business. Here, we can mail any letter, any package, just using our computer and printer, and the mailman picks it up. Avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. Create your Stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Just click, print, and mail, and you're done. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Stamps.com makes it easy. They'll send you a digital scale to automatically calculate the exact postage. This is just so essential and helpful for running any type of small business. We used Stamps.com here for all of our needs, and we will have more of those needs soon, hopefully, if we ever up our swag game. And right now, you can enjoy Stamps service with a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus postage, and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code MAJORITYREPORT. That's stamps.com. Enter Majority Report. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Fresh Two Dope Boys in a podcast drop today. Hope everybody's doing well. We will be right back on the Majority Report with Wajahat Ali.
Learned how to think, at least about scientific matters. That's why he can do so many amazing things. But a scientist isn't supposed to believe anything much unless it's supported by evidence.
Lame foot soldiers get croaked in my vicinity. The O for O murder, criminal activity. Diamond encrusted bracelets, escape death. Cars and yachts, I flaunt things that say success. So to the warden turns my electric chair on. Inside a LeBaron trunk, got Pakistan hair on. Nasir Jones, not a capo. The Picasso, word painter, Black Sinatra, rap King Cole. Gangster, point blank body armor. I'm balanced, you're the Dalai Lama. You just holler drama.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now is Wajahat Ali, or Waj Ali. He's a writer for the New York Times, contributor on CNN, and a bunch of other places where you can encounter him and his opinions. How you doing, man?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing well. Like I said before, I'm not one for the tyranny of extra syllables, so you can call me Wajahat or you can call me Waj. It's fine.
Oh, well.
I like to make things easy as a moderate Muslim for my fellow Americans.
Yeah, I was appreciating that. I was noticing that because I think a lot of you people ask a lot of us, and I appreciate the attitude.
Yes. Us people, I mean, look, it's difficult to tolerate our existence. I mean, you know, first we've taken over New York with halal carts.
Yes.
So the tyranny of chicken shawarma and lamb. Now all of a sudden, apparently we, you know, you guys elected us into the White House for 8 years. Thank you, white people and progressives.
Yeah. And it wasn't enough that he was Muslim. He also had to be like bisexual and hate white people. And every time,
I've never heard the bisexual stuff. I mean, the thing that really terrified me as an American is that he had a Portuguese water dog.
Well, of course he did. Yes. That is the dog of the metrosexual Sharia promoter. Come on, you should know this. Come on, man.
This is the dog of choice for us hipster Muslims.
Yeah,
the secret's out.
Yeah, exactly. I know what the deal is, man. I have my own. I'm deeply connected to the hipster jihad community.
Oh my God.
If I believe what's written about
Michael's
me online,
like that old uncle. He goes, "I'm hip. I'm cool. I know what the hipster Muslim jihad is like.
Yeah.
I know they like the Portuguese water dog.
I know they like the Portuguese got water dog. I know what the Bangladeshi guy who's selling me shawarma really wants to do to this country. I'm hip.
Oh,
yeah. It's like, you know what it is? It's like Fredo and Godfather 2. It's like, I'm smart. Not like everybody says.
I'm smart. and then who kisses the Fredo then on the lips? It was you. It was you, Fredo.
That would be you, actually.
Yeah, I would be.
Yeah, either you or Reza Aslan.
You mean Reza? So yeah. We're the Godfathers. This is actually true.
Yes.
But apparently Reza has a mutual friend of ours, Josh Seftel, who's now a Peabody nominated producer. He did this great series called The Secret Life of Muslims, which I consulted. Apparently they were doing a panel in L.A. And then Josh was telling me last week that Reza has anointed me now as the new token Muslim of CNN, as he has advanced into the nether regions, the upper regions of Valhalla, of token Muslims. So he says now I'm apparently, he has appointed me as a new godfather.
Yes, I think.
Which is good. Yeah. I was trying to earn it for the last 10 years. I'm glad I finally got it.
He's Brando, you're Pacino, and may your reign be just as extra brutal as Pacino's.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I thought you were going to say he goes, may your first child be a masculine child.
May your first child be a child that conforms with Sharia law, whatever gender that is.
The funny thing is, can you imagine people who think we're actually serious right now? Like the type of how many
hard. Oh, there's going to be a lot of people who think we're serious. There's going to be a lot of this is going to go around certain corners of the internet with the like, well, at least they're honest. It was like when we did
finally.
When we did the leaked call. This is the last tangent we'll go on, but we did the secret recording of Obama calling up British intelligence and being like, oh, I'm going to need a wiretap on Donald Trump and every white person in the Florida panhandle. And we were like, this is going to get picked up and clipped like on Alex Jones. I'm genuinely surprised it hasn't.
That was a pretty good Obama impression. Well done there.
No, I appreciate
it. I met someone at the live show whose friend brought it up to him.
That it was a real thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And he was like, what show is it? And it was, yeah.
No, then I would, okay. So then in the spirit of that, I would like to say going forward that everything that we have just said is true. And this brings us to the topic of the hour, my resistance movement. And I think everybody now knows exactly what that means. but no, Waj, you have written specifically about, and this will get us to much, you know, broader themes, but I think this very paradoxical relationship with the Muslim community in America, because on one hand, I think a lot of people have broadly recognized, at least, you know, finally, as the, you know, the bigotry has kind of migrated from conspiracy theory recesses to, you know, pop sociology books to night, you know, late show monologues, stuff we'll get to later. But with the Trump administration, it turned to act, you know, or there always was policy targeted at Muslims, but obviously the Muslim ban is an escalation. And, you know, there was this notion that obviously Muslims are part of the quote unquote resistance, but there's still a very ambiguous relationship with the Muslim community that crosses almost all demographics in America. So you've written about it specifically as a Muslim father, as a Muslim who's obviously very engaged civically in the United States. What is your particular angle on it?
I mean, so I joke that Muslims are so popular now. We're like right. We're like the really pretty girl or like the cool jock in high school. Like everyone's giving you lavish attention, even the people that you want to avoid.
Oh, I see.
And the joke I say, and I was not, by the way, the cool jock. I was the awkward fat kid with lentil stains on his shirt who sweated profusely. So
you gotta keep an eye on him.
This feeling of popularity and love. And yeah, I always joke that if you drink and you took a shot of alcohol each time the Trump administration or the Republicans mentioned Islam or Muslims or radical Islam, you'd probably be dead of alcohol poisoning by like last August.
Yes,
definitely. And if you are like me and a teetotaler and took a shot of mango lassi, you'd go into a diabetic coma. And the reason why I mentioned that is it's like, you know, it's like your choose your own adventure book, right? It's a surreal existence for many American Muslims. And this is not just for Muslim Americans, but those of other minority communities living in America right now. I say it's like a choose your own adventure book from hell. Mm-hmm. Turn left and you might end up in the Muslim camps. Turn right, and you'll be helping build a wall with Mexicans because they think you're Mexican just because you're brown, even though you're not. Right. And then you turn around to Democrats and progressives, and all of a sudden, even though we were kryptonite in 2008, now they have like posters of us and like, you know, Khizr Khan's out there, and apparently we're like the cool hip minority that progressives can hang around to prove that they're woke. And so
I'm such
all this,
a trendsetter,
you know,
man. I've been hanging out with you fucking people for a long time.
Yeah, Michael was like, I put my hand around you three years ago.
Yeah, what's the
I was on the Muslim hipster bandwagon.
I'm on that. I've been woke.
I've been eating that shawarma with my hands, mother effer, with my hands. Right. You know, but it's interesting, in all seriousness, I use humor for sake of catharsis, and, you know, some people cry, I laugh. The way, and I think this might be seen as a melodramatic statement, but I don't think so. I think the way America engages, deals, and reconciles its relationship with Islam and American Muslims and people of color in particular will be some of the defining, it will help define the direction of whether or not America can achieve this thing called the American dream or whether or not we'll collapse into isolated pockets of nightmares for many of our communities. And the reason why I mention that is the following. Muslim Americans are the most diverse religious communities in America. We're talking about 4 million people, and 30% African-American or black, 25% South Asian, 20% Arab, and then the rest miscellaneous, good old miscellaneous. But we're looking at, you know, when people say, oh, man, there is, you know, I've studied Islamophobia and I've studied what, you know, the hate movements. Yes, there's tremendous similarities with what's happening to Muslims right now. It's kind of like tag, you're it, you're the boogeyman. Mm-hmm. And literally, I can tell you can remove what they say about Muslims in these, you know, extremist memes, and you replace Catholic. That's what they were saying about Catholics in the 50s and 60s and about Jews in the 30s and 40s. The difference, though, is the following. These are two differences, and this is where we're at right now, is Jews and Catholics were able to merge into this vanilla yogurt of whiteness,
right,
which Muslims won't be able to do that, too,
right.
Number one.
Right.
Number two, if you look at comparison, say, with the LGBTQ communities, it's like the worst thing you'll get now, and I'm not taking away from the suffering of LGBTQ, is people say, oh, that's gross. You know, I don't like that. With Muslims, it's this mother effer might kill me.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a national security threat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I led this conversation, you know, we're joking about being the moderate Muslim, but both for, I would say, Republicans and even Democrats / progressives, the good Muslim is he or she who is advancing a national security narrative that makes us feel safe.
Right.
The bad Muslim is potentially everyone else. And so... Right. Our job here is to see the nuances in between, and that nuances actually reflects the diversity of, I think, all of America.
Yeah, I mean, I want to just sort of table. I know that some people might kind of object to, you know, obviously homophobia still works in many different ways, and I know that you agree
course,
with that. But that distinction that is specific is important in terms of, and obviously you see this with the only kind of similar analogy now is, you know, the racism towards people from, you know, Mexico and Latin America being kind of all, you know, they're all drug traffickers. Then there's the, you know, classic racism of, you know, Chicago and what that means in people's minds and how they both translate into police brutality and, you know, vicious immigration policies. But you're absolutely right. And, you know, very globally with Muslims that, you have a discourse in the United States right now, and it's, you know, it shows up very clearly in foreign policy. We can review the sort of Trump first 100 days, but that there is essentially a framework that says the only possible ways to be that quote unquote good Muslim is if you, you know, in the United States, if you're a Muslim, and I would say, you know, quite overtly, you're the token Muslim at some, you know, right-wing atrocity-promoting think tank, and you're there to just go on TV and co-sign anything we do or anything Israel does. Or, you know, and this is getting back to reverting back to, you know, this is where Trump is being, you know, actually pretty traditional in U.S. foreign policy. You're General al-Sisi, and you are, you know, and that's acceptable. And then on the flip side, you're right. It creates a discourse where everyone from, you know, just taking you as a handy, you know, as the direct example here, who does all of the things that people, you know, constantly talk about and as issues. You're quite prominent on issues of women's rights, gender equality, you know, LGBTQ community inside the Muslim community. And you're also someone who's going to call out, you know, airstrikes that kill civilians all over the Middle East. The discourse sets up a situation where you're on a continuum with the most fanatical extremist elements in the Middle East just via the only connecting thread of having a critique of U.S. foreign policy. And that is incredibly dangerous. Yeah.
And, you know, the interesting thing is that as a Muslim, you end up being indicted, convicted, and sentenced by a nameless judge and jury for crimes that you have not committed in continents you have never visited.
Right.
And if something happens, say, an ISIS attack in France, and all of a sudden all of quote-unquote Islam, whatever that means, becomes suspect, and somehow I, in America, have to answer for it and apologize for it. So it's this constant condemnathon. It's always being seen as a suspect. And look, not to engage in any, you know, minority suffering contests, this is very similar to other minority groups who are still suffering. It's just that what we're witnessing now and tying some of these themes is, you made a point in the beginning, that this is now out in the open. So even many liberal friends of mine who said, oh, man, you guys are just talking about that Islamophobia. It's not that bad. It's so rampant,
right?
Literally emanating like a fart from the White House, where you can taste it and smell it now. Like you can literally grab the bigotry and eat it.
I feel so ill right now.
I know. I tried to make it as odious as possible.
It is.
But, you know, and let's cross the Atlantic and see what's happening just in France and Netherlands. Like Marine Le Pen, an ally of Trump and Nigel Farage. And also, let's not forget, Putin getting money from Russia, which I'm glad finally people are talking about. Far-right nationalism, non-interventionist, non-EU, and one of the major top three talking points that she's had for years is anti-Muslim, right?
Right.
Anti-Muslim immigration, Islamophobia. Look at Trump. Look at Geert Wilders in Netherlands. Look at Austria. Look at Hungary. This is a disturbing trend where we're looking at the march of white nationalism, which is essentially asserting itself again predominantly around issues of immigration, language, culture, and a civilizational clash between the West, whatever that means, and Islam, whatever that means. And
right.
This is quite literally the worldview of Steve Bannon, who's the chief strategist of Donald Trump. And so these are some fascinating times. When I said what I said about the defining narratives of America, I don't say that lightly. I say that in the context of literally facts and what's happening right now and what we're observing as living agents of this history, right? What's happening right now in France and Netherlands and America. And so these are some interesting times. And, to be an American Muslim or to be Muslimy, that's why I joke that it's very exciting. It's like choose your own adventure. Like what's going to happen? Because liberals, it seems, like us right now. But do they really like us, and do they like a certain version of us? And I'll pivot here and kind of knock the progressives a bit.
Yeah.
Because I've been I've experienced this where apparently I'm safe to many progressives until they find out that I don't drink and I fast during Ramadan. And I'll be the same.
Wait, hold on. You do that?
I know, man.
Okay.
The cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, I think we might need to wrap
Sharia
this up.
Sharia now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Just to be clear, Kelly in the studio is not covered, okay?
Oh, my gosh.
No. Sorry, man. Go ahead.
Tell that brazen heathen of a woman to cover herself. How dare she?
Sam says that every day. It doesn't make any difference.
I don't want to see her barren shoulders. My God. I'm kidding. I'm sure your shoulders are very nice. It's just a joke. Look, but that's exactly it. You know,
right.
You touched upon it. Like you were joking, but you literally touched upon what otherwise very well educated, and I'm talking about Ivy League educated New Yorkers who have traveled the world, the assumptions, casual assumptions they make, and they say it to your face. It's like, do you cover your wife? Like, what? Women run my life. What are you talking about? Or do you hate all the Jews? And I'm like, what century do you live in, man? I thought you just went to Morocco and hung out with Muslims. And it's this kind of tone deaf,
right.
Lack of cultural awareness of world religions and cultures that's not emanating from the right wing, Michael. As you've seen in many progressive circles, a lot of people ain't really that woke when
right.
it comes to people of color or Muslims. And that's something we also have to deal with.
Yeah, I want you to elaborate on that a little bit more. I get a lot of heat when I kind of bring up this aspect of it. And I want to be really clear, too, that this is nothing. These conversations have become so stupid that this has nothing to do with, there's a character that doesn't really exist as an example that you're someone who wants to understand, the religious and cultural traditions over a billion people, the different regional implications of foreign policy, trade agreements, and everything else. So obviously with that kind of perspective and the fact that you don't categorically reject these people, then you're probably defending genital mutilation, right? Which is the type of thing that I get, which is, of course, such utter insanity and, pseudo-intellectual paranoia. The real thing that we're trying to get to, I think, is on two fronts. One is to just say, this isn't an anti- or pro-Islam conversation, in my view. It's a know-what-you're-talking-about-when-you-share-the-world-with-people conversation. And that includes a lot of, complex things. It also includes for some people, in some of my cohorts, whether we like it or not, some people have religious beliefs. And I think that there's a very sharp distinction between saying, okay, if you want to live in Europe or the United States, as an example, of course you need to, educate your daughter as an example. It's a massive overstatement and racial paranoia that most Muslims in these communities don't want to do that, right? Like, that's where the mythology comes in. Or, you know, the same with Christians or any other kind of fundamentalists. We're not going to alter public school systems to fit religious teachings is a completely different conversation than I just am intrinsically unsettled and have a fundamental innate problem with somebody having religious worldview. And I think that that's, you know, it's just not sustainable. It's not dealing with the reality of varieties of human existence. And then you add on top, so you add on top of that this kind of pop culture conversation of, I would say, a kind of progressive-ish, almost soft alt-right that is very adamant that it's not about race because it's about beliefs. But I have to say,
it's very, you know, Kenny G, John Tesh alt-right.
It's John Tesh all, exactly. And it's all about having a fair-minded conversation, even though those fair-minded conversations never involve any actual study. And it does cluster.
Or Muslims.
Or Muslims. Or the only Muslims would be, you know, the softer version of the same, you know, the guy that comes out from the think tank to validate what everybody already thinks. So, yeah, I mean, I'm queuing it up for you, but take it any direction you want, because I do think that's a big problem.
It was, you know, astute observations. It's the problem of this type of absolutism, which is detrimental to having any sane policy or sane discussions where the majority of human beings are a variety of different shades and colors, right? And I always give this type of analogy that well-intentioned folks on all sides see Muslims as either carnivores or vegetarians. That's it, right? Good right. Muslim, right. Bad Muslim.
Right.
Islam versus the West, whatever this means. And so I'll give you an example. And you touched upon this, and this is going to be a problem for progressives and liberals moving forward, is that you have to make peace with the fact that there are many people within America who are your natural allies on many progressive issues, say criminal justice reform, say, you know, higher wages, say affordable health care, say women's rights. But they might be in their personal life socially conservative, or believe it or not, they might actually believe in God and be religious people.
Right.
Demonization of these communities, this wholesale mockery of their identity and their being does not win you over converts, and is actually being manipulated very deliberately and successfully by the Republican people who have used religion cynically to garner votes. So number one, strategically, you lose. Number two, it inspires really ridiculous conversations which traffic in, I would not even say John Tesh alt-right type of demonization, but just straight up, it's like liberals who can easily be on Fox News when they're right. talking about like Islam. And I'll give you one example, which right. liberals hate me bringing up, but Bill Maher.
Yeah.
The way Bill Maher talks about Islam and Muslims, the first defense liberals say is, well, he knocks all religions that way, maybe. But there is a particular malice and animosity with the way he attacks not just Islam, but also Muslims and Arabs, and women, by the way, if you've paid attention to him.
Yeah.
And he parrots many of the talking points of some of these folks from the quote-unquote new atheist movement, who I think resemble, to me growing up, I went to an all-boys Jesuit Catholic high school, and with Muslims, they really resemble in their attitude and their behavior and their actions, especially online, right-wing fundamentalists.
Yeah,
from, you know, literally, that's they just call themselves atheists. My way or the highway, I'm right, you're wrong. I'm absolutist about my views. I refuse to listen to you, and I'm going to use a huge swath to bat you all down. And now you're seeing finally in 2017 a small pushback to Bill Maher's type of attack on Islam. Because he says, as a liberal, I'm allowed to attack Islam, whatever that means, and Muslims, because I'm for all these rights. And if you're a fellow liberal, you should attack Islam and Muslims, because I'm defining Islam and Muslims, the religion of 1.6, 1.7 billion people, by the worst of their attributes and the worst of their actors, completely dismissing the vast majority of Muslims, their lived experiences, and their interpretations. And I'm not going to talk to Muslims because I don't want to talk to Muslims, because I'm only going to marshal them out as pawns to advance my political agenda and ideologies.
Right.
And the thing is, when many Muslims listen to this, and the last thing I'll say is, they're like, dude, I'm actually very progressive. I'm actually your ally in many of these things. But when you have a liberal like Bill Maher, and I close my eyes and I hear him talk about Islam and Muslims, there's no difference between him and Bill O'Reilly.
Right.
And that's the difference right now. And then liberals like you come out and you want nuance. You're not pro-religion. You're not anti-religion. You just want nuance. Right. But if you have nuance, especially from some progressive circles, then it seemed that you are becoming a Muslim apologist and a Muslim lover, which is also silly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, I mean, this is why I attacked, you know, I had a piece on Bill Maher relatively recently that I did with Steve Cook. And this was kind of, I mean, more broadly, it was like, this is the sort of pop culture version of the low information sort of, or, you know, there's one thing to have people that are low information. It's a whole other problem when someone is low information, but they think they're high information. And it helps build the infrastructure for, you know, at the very least, indirectly, what's happening now. And people like Sam Harris can go and whine that they're taken out of context and they don't support such and such a policy. And they can kind of sit in, you know, on their blogs and come up with some convoluted jujitsu. But the reality is, in real world politics, in real life, as things are actually happening, they're helping provide infrastructure for it. I guess the, and I know that you've had to answer this question a lot, and I'm sure it's annoying. And I actually think that people need to start considering, like, there's been some slight progress in terms of, you know, hey, why is it that anytime there's an issue that implicates, you know, women as an example or African Americans, why is the onus on people that are on the receiving end of things to explain it? And I don't think we're there at all. I mean, we're still at the opposite place with Muslims. It's like, dude, you better explain everything imaginable. But that said, I mean, I know just because of this conversation, and I would say it's lessening, and partially that's, you know, self-selection with the audience. The real diehards of that kind of new atheist world have probably left. And some people have, well, let me borrow Sam Harris's phrase, they've woken up and they've gotten a little bit more sophisticated on these issues. But there still is going to be a contingent of people who are going to swarm on social media and everywhere else at me and at us and at you. And they're going to do, you know, this is not about, it's certainly not about race, and Islam is belief, and these beliefs are bad. You know, that's the catechism of that belief system. And I just want, when you even, in some respects, put Islam in a quotation mark, or the West in a quotation mark, can you kind of give, like, the broad, some version of, like, the terrain of, like, why this categorical civilization block statement is diluted, not just even on a cultural and geographic level, which maybe people might understand some level because it's in their face, but even just on a religious and spiritual and theological level?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, who is Islam and who is the West?
Right.
I've never met Islam. You know, Islam, there's one Islam I've met and he owes me $5. And so, and the reason why I mentioned that, and that's true though, because Islam, and there's a genesis to this. Look, and this is very similar. And I want those who are listening, there are people across the Atlantic, when I go and visit many Muslim majority countries, they ask me, why does the West hate Islam?
Right.
And I say, what do you mean by the West? So when we're talking about these people, what are the images and narratives that come into our mind? And I'll tell you exactly what's happening. This is nothing new. These types of narratives that have existed that have dehumanized others. Islam, you know, meant for the longest time a foreign brown bouillabaisse of a religion.
Right.
In America, in the 60s, at the very least, it became associated with black radicalism, mm-hmm. for better or worse, with the ascension of Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, it became dour, angry, anti-American with the 1979 Iranian Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini.
Mm-hmm.
Islam in the 80s then became Saddam Hussein, became the Intifada. It became
Gaddafi.
Like Middle Eastern violence.
Yeah.
Yes, Gaddafi. And then, with the two towers falling, Islam became Osama bin Laden, which is al-Shabaab, which is ISIS, which is al-Qaeda, which is Boko Haram, which is Duck Dynasty, because they all look alike.
Right.
I'm just joking.
I got it. I got it.
Yeah, thank you. And so it deliberately emerged into a civilizational conflict. And that type of language of a civilizational conflict has been engineered very deliberately and strategically by people who were once fringe members of the extreme right, both in the Islamophobia industry here in America, but also, let's not forget, Le Pen was once fringe, Farage was once fringe, Wilders was once fringe. With the destabilization, economic recession, borders, refugee crisis, and this white panic, what we've seen now is essentially national security, a sense of their physical and identity, the physical being and their identity being threatened. Now, quote unquote, Islam, that label, the left, whatever you will, we're looking at absolutist terms. And then you throw into the other factors of our, you know, isolated cocoons and fake news media and yada, yada. And we're becoming tribalized around these absolutist identity markers. And specifically, what needs to happen is an active disruption, which, and this is the positive trend, as a result of this extreme tilt, and I would say even the election of Trump, even what you're seeing with Le Pen coming in number two, and the rise of Macron, who's like a 39-year-old nobody, and now might actually become the president, the failure of Farage, the failure of Wilders, to an extent, you're seeing enough people, like a multicultural coalition of the willing, that had their heads in the sand and said, you know what, I need to learn more. I think there's another story out there. You and I would not be talking 15 years ago when the Two Towers fell. A white guy who apparently would be an expert on Islam, who apparently dated a Lebanese blonde and ate hummus, would be seen as the expert on Muslims.
Right.
And the problem was, and the thing of which I'll say is a problem within American Muslim communities, I've tried to be very honest with the self-audit as well, is, you know, if you're not writing your story is being written for you by others.
Right.
And we did not emerge as protagonists of our own narrative. And as such, that narrative was colored by the extreme examples that I've given. And so if you don't bum rush the show, both in policy, in specific legal cases, grassroots, education, and so forth, these fields where honestly we did not, you know, dominate. We dominated much more in medicine, in business, in engineering. Other people are writing that story. And so now I think more and more Americans are realizing, wait, if you talk about the Rust Belt, don't demonize all the Rust Belt as like opioid addicted, like toothless white people. Just like don't, you know, all the left and progressive are not like bisexual, like you said.
Speak for yourself. On, like, I'm totally bisexual.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like,
I'm open and fluid in my identity.
These weed smoking bisexual vegans dancing on top of bars with tramp stamp tattoos, which, by the way, might be the best liberal leftist stereotype I've come up with.
Yeah.
But this is a situation where we're in, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so look, these are problems. Last thing I'll say is these are problems that exist within the right, the left, and Muslim communities. And for us to move forward, we have to blow up these absolutist cocoons that we live in, number one, and these absolutist ideologies, and see the gray shade of humanity that exists. And I hope liberals and progressives are willing to do that, just like the right wing needs to do it as well.
Absolutely. Wajahat Ali, you can find him in New York Times, CNN, Huffington Post, many other places. I always appreciate your time, man, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.
A pleasure. Okay, everyone, we are going to get to the fun half. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. The IMs are on. And there's actually a brief announcement that Kelly needs to make. And it has to do with, you know, we had a conversation about this on Two Dope Boys in a podcast on the YouTube loss of revenue. And there's so much stuff here about when private companies create commons, but they're not governed like commons. There's big implications here for the future of how independent media and independent anything is funded and dealt with in the corporate age. But practically, you can move on to our Patreon if you are a person who enjoys us on YouTube. And Kelly's going to explain that to you.
Explain the YouTube?
Well, we're losing a lot of money on YouTube. Our revenue is completely dried up. And if you watch the show on YouTube and you're not a member of the podcast, we need you to step up and fill the void. And you can do that by going to our new Patreon page.
Right. The news and politics category has been hit with, basically wiped out.
We've lost a massive amount of our revenue from YouTube.
So we do have a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/majorityreport. And we're hoping that people will contribute so that we can continue to make videos. I wanted to give a shout out to the very first Patreon contributor that we had, who is Trevor from Tuskewa, Illinois. I don't know if I said that right. But
it's all right. You got Trevor right. Thank you, Trevor.
Trevor,
much
thank
appreciated.
You. Shofar.
Well, yeah. Am I
what's happening?
Why is my board?
Oh, sorry.
Matt, what are you doing? doing it.
Thank you, Trevor. I'm sorry you got two half shofars there.
Yeah, and thank you, everyone else. It's really exciting. I've been getting an email every time somebody signs up, for, no matter how small the donation. It's really actually nice to have all of that coming into my inbox because it kind of brightens up my day. You guys might have noticed that not everything we talk about on the show is happy.
That is the truth. All right, so everybody, that's the Patreon. JustCoffee.coop, the deal's running through the end of April. I believe that is MRSpring17 is the code for that. Links to all of this are on the webpage. IMs are on. I'm going to call into the phone system in a second. We'll see you on the flip side.